two questions. One, can you talk about why you have decided to continue looking into the blend wall argument and acknowledging that there is this blend wall? And secondly, can you talk about how you hope to remain on track after 2016 and don't get off track where you're at a place where you are today, having to issue three rules at once? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. I'll take the second one first. I think that this year's rule, which covers the 3 years and gets us back on track, is what the program needs in order to be able to make sure that we meet those deadlines in the future. And we're completely committed to doing that, and we're confident we'll be able to do that. You can take a look at the package. We do discuss the blend wall. It is an issue, but you'll see that we lay out a variety of possible scenarios for the various fuels that make up biofuels to be able to meet the volumes that we're proposing.
And our next question comes from the line of Mark Drogin with Bloomberg News.
Thank you. Janet, what room is there for the cellulosic biofuels to take any market share if the blend wall is in place and if corn ethanol is already established?
There's a separate category for cellulosic, as you know, and this proposal represents a significant growth in that. The blend wall is not in place and won't prevent cellulosic fuels from growing as they can, as we hope they will, and as we think that these volumes will encourage them to do.
Great. Why not?
I'm sorry, Mark. We're trying to get to all of the questions. Sorry. Could we take the next question, please, operator?
And our next question comes from the line of Rachel Gantz with Oil Price Information.
Yes, hi. Do you expect any further RFS-related litigation, and how exactly would that affect, if any, EPA's plan to get the RFS schedule back on track?
Hi, Rachel. I'm not going to speculate about the possibility of litigation. We're just going to move forward with the rulemaking.
Great. Next question, please, operator.
And our next question comes from the line of Alex Guillen with Politico.
Good morning. The proposed rule says that refiners should have done more to prepare for the E10 blend wall, but it also gives biofuel producers a slap on the wrist. And biofuel folks say that's unfair and that you're giving a pass to the obligated parties who just didn't want to take action. So are you placing blame on all parties here, or what's going on with this whole blend wall thing?
We're not blaming anybody in the rule. We're reflecting what we're seeing in terms of actual data, and reflecting what we read to be Congress's intent to move these fuels forward. So people just need to take a look at the numbers and give us their thoughts on what we see as an ambitious but responsible approach to meeting Congress's intent.
Thank you. Next question, please.
And our next question comes from the line of Grant Gerlach with Net Radio Nebraska.
Can you explain specifically how you see these levels, these proposed levels, matching up with gasoline consumption in this period of time?
Well, sure. I mean, we certainly keep track of gasoline consumption, and it's a relevant factor. We, of course, start with the statutory volumes that Congress set out and then do our best to determine what will be achievable in the marketplace following Congress's intent. So we will, before we finalize the rule, we'll have information about gasoline use, and we'll factor that into our decision.
Thanks. Next question, please.
And our next question comes from the line of Amanda Petarka with Greenwire.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. Just curious, in this proposal, what role you see for E15 and E85 sort of in the context of overcoming the blend wall issues?
Yeah, thanks for the question. We talk about that a fair amount in the proposal, and there's a lot of discussion about the ability of to move more volumes of ethanol through E85 and E15, and I commend that discussion to you. There's a lot of interest in doing that. There's a lot of support within the administration for helping to provide support for the infrastructure to grow in those areas, and we see that as an important aspect of being able to grow the volumes of renewable fuels.
Next question, please.
And our next question comes from the line of Philip Brosher with AgriPulse.
Yes, I'm going to ask you, I guess it's probably specific to cellulosic ethanols. You talk a lot about encouraging growth, incentivizing, certainly encouraging growth and incentivizing growth and production. But I believe Appeals Court a couple of years ago struck down your cellulosic ethanol by saying it wasn't realistic. How did you deal with that legal concern? How did that factor in, and how did you, in terms of making sure these numbers were realistic in terms of what will actually be produced and not what you'd like to see produced?
Yeah, well, the court directed us to take a neutral aim at predicting cellulosic volumes, and that's what we've done in the package, and you'll see that when you read the proposal. We work closely with this industry and certainly work with them on reviewing applications for new pathways, and we want to be as expeditious as we can in getting those kinds of new fuels into the system, and we're very encouraged at the activity in this industry. But you'll see that we've followed the directions of the court to take a neutral view and a fact-based view of potential growth in that sector.
Thanks. Next question.
And our next question comes from the line of Spencer Chase with AgriPulse.
Yeah, just going through my inbox and looking at some releases from renewable fuel groups, they don't appear to be entirely thrilled with the gradual increase approach that you guys are discussing, or the responsible but ambitious, I think is the terminology you've used. So I'm just wondering the logic behind that instead of jumping straight up to the statutory levels. I mean, did you not think that there, or was there just some thought that maybe the industry and the consumers and the marketplace in general just weren't ready for that many gallons of biofuels?
Well, we do think that this is an ambitious but responsible approach to the numbers, and we don't think, as we lay out in the proposal, that the statutory volumes are reasonably achievable in the time frame that we're talking about here in this rule. You've got to keep in mind that we're setting volumes for 2014, 2015, and 2016. 2016 is not that far away. So in that time frame, we think that these volumes actually represent more than gradual growth. They represent ambitious growth and are appropriate in light of the of Congress's intent.
Thank you. Next question.
And our next question comes from the line of Dan Looker with Successful Farming.
Yes, just to follow up on that last question, by 2016, what share of the gasoline market will both conventional and advanced or cellulosic ethanol take? Will you be past the 10% blend wall? Do you have an estimate of what share of the market ethanol would be using?
Of course, depending on how the market responds to this, if ethanol fills these volumes, we would be at somewhere between 10.05 and 10.28%.
For all types of ethanol, cellulosic and renewable?
That's correct. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
And again, to ask a question, that is star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our next question comes from the line of John Siciliano with Washington Examiner.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to get a sense in the 2014 proposal where the breakdown is for corn ethanol. I know there's not a specific requirement for corn-based ethanol, but there is a sort of ramp up to lower carbon fuels based on where we get in the conventional biofuels. So just from the total biofuel percentage, what of that is conventional, and is it basic? It looks like it might be basically what you proposed in 2013 for 2014's target.
You're asking about 2014 specifically?
Yeah, Yeah, I just wanted to get an idea of the corn-based ethanol requirement based on what you've set for the total biofuel requirement. What of that is ethanol, corn ethanol? Is Chris still there?
Yes. I don't think we have that number right handy to give you a precise answer.
We're happy to follow up.
So
with you.
Follow up and
let's do that offline, John.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Next question, please.
And our next question comes from the line of Elliot Blackburn with Argos Media.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I was curious if you could talk about how state and local level regulations such as LCFS fit into EPA's outlook on attaining these blend rates.
They don't really. I mean, there are various activities going on across the country to support these fuels, but our job is to look at the statutory volumes and to look at what we determine can be reasonably achieved in a growth forward-looking approach over the next couple of years.
Great. And this is the last question we have time for today.
And our last question comes from the line of Emily Meredith with Energy Intelligence.
My question was just if you could go into a bit more detail on the different scenarios for the blend walls and talk about how you foresee that in the rule in November, if you foresee those as still being scenarios or if you foresee being a little bit prescriptive.
Well, they're scenarios because the market will decide what fuels will be sold and used. So we lay out scenarios so that people can see the possible ways that what we've proposed here could be complied with. What we'll finalize in November are the volume standards for the specific categories of fuel that the statute requires us to set volumes for. So that means cellulosic, biomass-based diesel, advanced biofuel, and total renewable fuel. And then the market will decide exactly how those volumes get met.
Great. Thank you. And we're going to have to close for today, but if you do have follow-up questions, please feel free to email us at press@epa.gov. Thank you for jumping on the line today.